from the biggest stages in golf.
64-foot, 5-inch putt to win his first major championship. That was storybook stuff, Gabe.
To the courses right here in Wisconsin.
Made sure we had plenty of chicken salad.
She gave me a member's service.
She most certainly did.
Salad.
Again, the guy at the front gate thought you were an employee. Maybe she thought you were an employee out here playing as well.
We're talking majors, tour drama, and the rounds we wish we didn't have to post. This is On the Tee, alongside PGA Tour Live Stephen Watson. Here's Gabe Neitzel.
An unforgettable 90th edition of the Masters, and we will certainly get into Rory McIlroy's second consecutive green jacket in just a moment. But where we start today on the tee and the opening drive presented by Ewald Automotive Group, their 62-year anniversary sale, it is here. You can get anniversary savings at over 1,400 cars, trucks, and SUVs. It's happening everywhere at every Ewald location. Just head to ewaldauto.com. But where we start, Stephen, we talked a little bit about it last week here on the tee, and we dive into this. There is a deep dive with our friends Nolan Murphy and Brian D that is also available right now. Check it out. Wherever you get your On the Tee podcast, it's right there. The ESPN Wisconsin app, just in the On the Tee feed. Check out the YouTube page if you want to see the video. But we were both there. For me, it was my second time. For you, the first time you ever went to Augusta National. You got to go on Thursday. We got to talk about it last week. How was your experience at the happiest place on earth?
As my face lights up. I didn't think it was possible to exceed expectations for the anticipation I had coming into what this day would mean to me. And it exceeded expectations. It's so hard in this hyperbolic world to match the moment. And Augusta National exceeded it. And a lot of it was because I was with the two people that I wanted to be with more than anyone on that property, and my mom and my dad. And getting to walk those grounds with them and spend the entire day with them is something I will never forget. The other thing is just the way that place makes you feel. Leading up to it, the emotions, parking the car, leaving my phone in my car, how that made me feel, just being like, I'm unplugging from the world for the next 10 hours.
How many times early? Because you get used to it. How many times early did you pat the pocket?
Oh, gosh. Maybe too many, like an embarrassing number of times.
Where is it? Where you just kind of go, and you're like, oh, wait, no.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to be there today.
Yeah. That's scary. But, people are asking, like, what does it feel like there? And I tell people over the last week who have inquired, and I said, it's kind of like modern-day Pleasantville. You don't find a single person there who's unhappy. You're kind of transported to this alternate universe where everybody's there for the exact same reason. Everyone, whether you were given a ticket, you got it through the lottery, or you overpaid for it, wanted to be there. And I've been to Super Bowls, and I've been to World Cups, and there's no place in the world. And I think not having your phone plays the largest, in this, where everybody is so present and so appreciative to be there. And I don't see how there's another experience in sport, maybe even in society, that gives you that shared feeling amongst 40,000+ people.
Well, and it's just down to the so many details that they understand and get right.
Yeah.
To the... there are people greeting you as you walk in to get your food at the different, hey, how you doing? How's everything? One person, when I was, we had gotten some food on the back part of the property, kind of toward the south gate, and we were getting some food over there. And as I'm checking out, have you checked out 16? Have you seen him skip it? Yeah, oh, you got to do that. Just giving you recommendations of things that you should be, because it's not just... I want to be there as a patron, and the person behind me wants to be there. Seemingly, even the people that work there want to be there and be a part of the magic of... And again, some of these are undesirable jobs where you're not getting to see the things that you get to see.
Yeah, you're just tucked at the bottom of the hill on 10 where you can't see a shot.
Or you're just getting people in and out of the bathroom in a timely fashion. But even those people aren't just like, yeah, here. No, they are... The energy that everybody gives to you that is an employee and working, just kind of helps also lift you throughout the course of the day. It's unlike any other place that you'll ever go to.
You know, the beauty, the history, the hospitality, it's second to none on that property, but they make it about the patron more than the property.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a masterclass in hospitality in that way. I'm glad you brought up the bathrooms, because that's when it really sunk into me of like, whoa, this is different. They literally have people walking the aisles in the men's bathroom telling you which stall is open.
Yeah.
Because every second matters. Mm-hmm. And they've done the research to know that those seconds you don't have to waste in line allow you to enjoy the property, enjoy the concessions, get to the merch, you know, shop, whatever it may be. But like, that stuff matters, and those details matter. Even the thing I was blown away from is the locations of the concessions and the restrooms,
mm-hmm.
How they're always tucked away so that whenever you're on the golf course and you're looking around at the sheer beauty of this golf course, you don't see buildings.
No.
You only see trees. You only see golf course. The concessions that might be in holes are all guarded by trees and bushes so that you don't see it. And, you know, they're tucked into the hillsides if you want to get to the merch shops.
Yeah.
And just the way that it forces you to enjoy with your other senses. And I think that that's also what's so unique about that property. Like, you get to see, you get to hear, you get to smell, and not have any type of distraction that's going to hold you back from feeling every bit of your senses.
Now, when you went, you could not have a camera. Because that is in the practice rounds, you can Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Thursday, you can't. And I am, especially in retrospect, so glad I didn't have one.
Yeah.
Because and I think of the one shot that I got to see that's going to stick with me forever is a tee shot Rory hit on 8. And I was just as close. When I went in 2019, I was fortunate enough to stand on the rope line when Tiger came through. He was playing with JT and Freddie, as he typically does in his practice rounds there. And I was like first on the rope line, right on 17, got some great pictures. I don't know where those shots went, because even then I'm focusing on getting the picture.
Yeah.
And I heard all the cameras snapping around me. I don't know how it didn't distract Rory, but he ends up hitting this just beautiful high draw over the bunker, starting on the bunker on the right and falling back to the left on number 8. And it's a shot I'm never going to forget. And I'm glad I didn't have a camera, because otherwise I'd have been too focused on, oh, I got to make sure you get the good picture. Man, being there and just being able to just watch it and enjoy it and have that memory, I don't care about anybody else's memory of that. I have my memory of that.
Yeah.
And too often you get consumed with, and I know they've kind of talked, Augusta's talked about this, and I can't remember who I was reading was kind of talking about it, of, you know, and you I think of when Tiger won in 2019 at the Tour Championship. And everybody's walking, they've got their phones out, right? They're trying to get the picture or the video. But you watch any sort of highlight, people with their arms in the air, clapping, going crazy. It just, you're so more just invested in being there. It creates an energy that you were talking about that cannot be replicated anywhere.
Yeah, and being there for the competition too, I talk about the senses. I think my takeaway from the experience of watching golf, because I wanted to be about the course more than the golf, but then I kind of got lost in the golf and allowed the entire day to come to me, which ended up being a blessing in disguise, because I think I enjoyed my experience tenfold instead of walking in there with a plan of I need to see 1 through 18, I need to walk them in that order. We came through the South Gate that took us right into Amen Corner, and the first thing I saw was the 13th green, Gabe. And it's my favorite hole at Augusta National.
It's the first thing I saw in 2019. It was awesome.
And I just stared in awe. I didn't reach for my pocket to grab my phone to take a picture, because that's what I would have done at Lambeau. That's what I would have done at, you know, I just enjoyed. And we were there early enough in the morning where nobody was there. There were no players there.
Yeah.
So it was just me, nature, and my favorite golf hole at the most unbelievable golf course in the world, and I just had a moment, and then I'm like, you ever seen Night at the Roxbury?
Yeah,
I was like that scene at Night at the Roxbury, where Will Ferrell walks into the club. He's like, "What's up? What's up? What's up? What's up? What's up? What's up? What's up?" Because I was so excited, and my mom and my dad had to like be like, "Relax, like We're going to see it all. We're going to do it all. But I just like 13, 15's right there. Mom, dad, that's 12. Like, and it was an unbelievable experience to be able to feel that. And what I was saying was to be there on a tournament day and to be able to experience the roars and the way the sound echoes through that property and how even if you don't see things with your eyes, you feel them. And that's something that, Gabe, I hope that you get to experience a tournament day because that's one of those things where like you feel it in your core. If you hear a roar, you look up at the leaderboard that's done by hand and you watch them slowly change the leaderboard and then you hear a secondary roar. And it's like kind of just this buzz of people talking. What happened? What happened? What do you think happened? Oh, that sounded like a Scotty roar. That sounded like Rory roar. There must have been a hole in one. You know, it's just it's really fun to look around at all these people who are there for the same reason as you. You might not know anything about them, but they're your best friend throughout the entire day. And that type of shared experience is something that I hope every sports fan gets to experience at some point in their life.
And I spent a lot of time thinking about it on our drive back, me and my buddy driving back Tuesday morning to Atlanta to catch our flights. And to echo a lot of the things you were just saying about this is where everyone wants to be, but it's not even just it's where everyone wants to be. It's where everyone's also on their best behavior.
Yeah, so true.
Right? Because you go, if you go to any sport, heck, if you go to the Brewers game, you know, in any one of these three, you could run into, even though they're rooting for the same team as you, you could run into an a-hole.
Yeah, it's fandom.
Like
people
that's
have favorites.
Yep. But at Augusta, everyone's on their best behavior because they don't want to get kicked out and they don't want to cross any sort of line. And everyone's on their best. And so everybody ends up having just such an enjoyable time.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. There's bros there.
Oh,
there are
yeah.
people that are trying to drink 20 beers and walk around and enjoy it. But you're right. You're not hearing anybody scream, you know, Baba Booey on tee shots or grilled cheese or...
I mean, the one guy on, what was that, Saturday? Was did you catch that? I think it was on 15.
15 or 16?
Yeah. I want to say it was 15.
Is this Mr. Egg Salad?
No, it was not Mr. Egg Salad.
Oh,
who's
okay.
Sitting behind hole 16. It was on 15 after I think Rory or somebody in that group hit a tee shot. Somebody yelled, "Give me back my son."
Mm-hmm.
Which I would assume is a somebody of a fan of the Jim Rome show because that is a the clones that has been a long running bit as part of the Rome show. So I think that person was escorted off the property,
yeah,
by the way.
They probably should have been. The other thing that blew me away, and it's no surprise, Gabe, was how dramatic that golf course is. You know, everybody says the undulation, just wait until you see it. You have a different appreciation. I was like, okay, I get it. Like, their slope, the greens are hard. And then you will go there and you're like, holy cow. 10 is absurd.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked down the hill and I walked up the hill. And the slope on the backside of that fairway bunker on 10 was one of those wow moments of
sure.
the way that swale occurs leading back up to a raised green. Some of the green complexes are incredible.
Which one do you think is the toughest?
Yeah, I think
and I
a
feel
lot
like...
of that is pin positioning. I was only there on Thursday, right?
Sure.
So I think it would change by the day. The ones that stood out to me were 3... 4, 14.
Okay.
14 with the clover green.
Mm-hmm.
What? I mean, that was one where I don't know where you could put a pin here and have any sort of flat putt. I mean, I would say 9 or 10. Sorry, 10.
See, so like, 9.
You could go 1 through 18 see, and every green complex is dynamic.
I don't want to say I was underwhelmed by 9. But it's not as severe as you think. I think 9's more subtle, but it does kind of run all the way back toward, but you can see the three distinct levels that it
yeah.
has to it.
And I watched from the fairway, I watched Scotty hit his approach on 9
yeah.
going up the hill, and he went over, and I was like, well, that's not going to be fun coming back down.
Because the levels themselves are relatively flat, but it's those, like if you end up on the wrong level, the little downhill is just so severe. That's where it catches the speed. And
yeah.
then that's where it becomes such a difficult putt. Judging the speed is if you are on the wrong level putting down to the correct level.
Yeah, on number three, I watch Mav McNeely have to hit a nippy wedge from the bottom left over the bunker.
Mm-hmm.
Like the amount of skill that shot took was incredible. In that same grouping, I watched Tyrrell Hatton give the middle finger and drop some expletives at the third green when he missed a short putt. I watched on 15, two guys make nine. I was there when Freddie Couples and Robert McIntyre made nine. And the roar I was alluding to earlier, I from a distance, I was sitting on the backside of 16, heard Rory make birdie on 15, and that's when that sound kind of just hit us in the face. We saw him give a fist pump and the whole crowd at grandstand on 15 go up. Like those types of moments you can't appreciate until you're there and you watch just how hard this golf course is, and especially on Thursday, the way that golf course was playing was really hard with the conditions.
We've got a lot more to dive into, and we get into the tournament. If you want to hear a complete breakdown of our experiences, again, Brian D. Nolan Murphy joined us. We have a podcast exclusive in the On the Tee feed about what it's like being on the grounds at Augusta National. That is our opening drive. It's brought to you by Ewald Automotive. And with 18 unforgettable holes on 250 acres of natural private land, the Bog provides the ultimate golf experience. After your round, stop at the clubhouse for food and drinks. Just call 262-284-7075 or visit golfthebog.com. We get into Rory winning his second consecutive Masters next on the tee. Golf Digest, 10th-ranked public course in the nation. It's right here in Wisconsin. Of course, it is Erin Hills. Great, charming overnight accommodations. Again, I got to see if maybe this is the year, Stephen, where I can actually talk about those charming overnight accommodations. Erin Hills, not that far outside of here in the state of Wisconsin, not too far outside of Milwaukee. I used to say it's your favorite place on earth.
Oh, you don't do this to me.
I mean, all I'm saying is, if it no longer is, I think our friends over at Erin Hills will understand.
Yeah, so friends at Erin Hills, I have one suggestion for you.
Pimento cheese?
Make the Georgia peach ice cream sandwich a regular thing at Erin Hills, because that was, without question, the best thing I ate on the grounds of Augusta National. That is perfection in the form of dessert.
What if they did something with cranberry, made it more Wisconsin?
No, cranberry doesn't slap like peach.
Okay.
We gotta think about, by the end of this show, I'll come up with a dessert.
Okay.
Yeah, we know the Fescue Rescue's undefeated.
Yes.
And let me tell you, the chicken salad at Erin Hills, better than at Augusta National.
Without a doubt. I will back that up. Because I had a chicken salad, I was a little disappointed.
Yeah, it was a little too mayo-y. I don't like mayo-y chicken salad. Also not like lump like you get at Erin.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I did have the chicken sandwich on a biscuit to start my day.
Oh, sure.
Took
breakfast
the pimento
sandwich.
Cheese off the white bread, spread it on the chicken biscuit. That was a hell of a way to start the day with a cup of coffee. But man, that Georgia peach ice cream sandwich, Gabe.
We know some people. I know they listen to the show. So erinhills.com. That's how you can book your tee time. Enjoy great championship golf here in the state of Wisconsin.
Maybe something like some sort of custard in between cookies,
okay.
Right? Like, you know, make it real Wisconsin-y.
Yeah.
Maybe like a Cops Erin Hills
collab. Oh, boy. Well, man, especially with the chocolate chip cookie. Maybe make that the outside, because Erin Hills has famously great chocolate chip cookies. Just saying.
I'll talk to our friends.
All right. We might be able to come up with something. Rory McIlroy, once again, your champion of the 90th Masters.
Never a doubt.
He is. What's incredible to me, and I sent this tweet out after, that unbelievable tournament. But to think about Rory, who for 15 years, this place had snake bitten him.
Yeah.
And it seemed like for the longest time, that this was going to be a place that was forever going to haunt him. And he would join the long list of, I mean, if we're being honest, Justin Rose probably starting to enter that list as well. But guys like Greg Norman, you know, who never won, Lee Trevino never won at Augusta National. And yet he's an all-time great, you know, in the history of this game. It seemed like that's the direction Rory was heading. But now, over the course of two championships, he goes from, you know, this being a place that had consistently snake bitten him. And if you watched any of the Rory documentaries, the one that's available on Amazon Prime, where he admits, sometimes I pretended like I didn't care. Sometimes I got here early. Sometimes I got here late. He tried everything in the run-up to Augusta. And now here we are, two Masters later. He is one of the all-time great champions because he has now done something that only three other men in the history of this tournament have done. And that is go back to back.
And the lid is off. And the confidence has to be as high as it's ever been for Rory McIlroy, not just at Augusta National, but in the game. And I'm happy for Rory. He did it in the most Rory way possible.
He can't ever be normal.
It's
Rory, part of the endearing part of it.
It's kind of like the Jordan Spieth experience.
Exactly.
We're just going to call it the Rory roller coaster. He's built for drama. He's an entertainer. And, you know, I would have been entertained with a runaway with where we sat going into the weekend with Rory.
Oh, because it would have been a historical statement.
Wow, now we're talking like Tiger 97.
Yeah, right?
And the way it happened was just so organically Rory, you know, where he just kind of let the field come back to him. He coming down to the final hole where he pushes his drive on 18, he hits shots that only he can hit. We just live and die with every single one of his swings. The emotion that he wears on his face makes you feel like you're there with him. I think the Rory McIlroy experience is truly one of one when it comes to these major championships. And I can't help but just be bought into all of it.
I thought it was over on four and that he wasn't going to win.
Yeah.
When he three putted and made double on four, which apparently now, you know, the final 18 at the Masters doesn't start until Rory makes a double. Maybe yeah. That's a thing now. But it was eerily similar to when he pulled the putt, and I forget the hole now, late in the round at Pinehurst, where it was just this little putt, seemed 16. Like he should have been able to clean it up. And for whatever reason, he just shut the face down and pulled it.
Yeah.
Just, ooh, what? And especially as great, and he literally putted great other than that hole. Like the other 71 holes, he was one of the best putters on property, especially the way he was able to putt off of the green and get up and down on a place like 16. But after he missed that putt, I'm like, oh, it's kind of old Rory, yeah. But he was able to right the ship and make a birdie on, even made another bogey on six, but he makes a birdie on seven and makes a birdie on eight. Had a good look on nine and is able to close down at 600, you know, at 36 even par on that front nine, and then do what he was able to do on Amen Court.
Yeah, I think what has made Rory such a fascinating watch is his resilience. Is he has these moments where he's human and these others where he's not, and it's a spectacle to witness. You know, like there were many moments where I was like, wow, he just let this thing get away. He let a 6-shot lead get away. And then he hits a shot like he hit on 12 that few men on planet Earth can hit. And he talked about it after the fact. That was based on an experience he had in 2009.
His first playing ever Masters.
With Tom Watson on how to read the winds. And listening to Rory talk about it, I've realized that like we have reached the time in Rory McIlroy's career where he doesn't have to win with his A game anymore. He can start to win with his experience, and he can win with the confidence that he can build on past experiences. And that was kind of what I feel like more than anything this week he unlocked was his ability to just get it done when he doesn't have his best stuff.
Because outside of four holes last year, I would have argued that he had his A game.
Yeah.
Outside of the four doubles that he made that nobody had ever made, you know, made that many and still won that tournament.
But for him to do what he did on 13 and then do it on and what he did on 15 last year was like that was the Rory resolve,
yes.
The resilience.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's kind of what makes him unique.
And yes, but that was also my big takeaway is him. He reached a different echelon of golfer. And I can't speak to some of the other people that are in that stratosphere as him, you know, like a Nick Faldo. Like Faldo won six. I don't know if he ever won one with his B game. I really don't, because I wasn't alive to see it. And in my lifetime, you know, in my lifetime being a golf fan, mid-90s and beyond, I can think of probably four guys that could win a major without their A game. Obviously Tiger, Phil.
Mm-hmm.
Scotty,
because
I think there have been times where he has won with not his A game, even though he's not on Rory's level. He has four.
I would argue that he won the PGA Championship with his B game on Sunday.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yep. And now Rory.
Yeah.
Like, and when Rory was grading himself afterwards, I would agree. I mean, he's the best driver of this generation. He might be the best driver of any generation of the golf ball. And his driver, he hit two fairways on par fives.
He hit 31 fairways the entire week, which is the fewest ever by a Masters champion.
He had a 6-shot lead going into the weekend. He was 90th out of 91 in driving accuracy. And it's worth pointing out that the person who was 91st in that statistical category was 91st in the field. Like, he was 91st in the tournament.
Yeah.
So you had, in driving accuracy, 91st was in 91st. 90th was in first by 6 shots.
But I don't think number 91 could hit a 350-yard drive on number 13 to set yourself up after making birdie on 12.
And that's the other thing.
And that, like, his strokes gained will always be in the top tier because that is still a weapon. Even when it's not going straight, it's still a weapon.
Well, and I love how he talked about that, too, because that's never been a problem for him because he loves turning the ball over with his driver. He can hit that draw, but then he hit it too far left, he said, on Tuesday or Wednesday. And next thing you know, he got a little spooked by that, and he's blasting it into the trees on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Yeah.
But then he's able to step up and hit it. And
I mean, the 72nd hole, if he doesn't have that length, he's dead. But because he hit it so far long and right, he actually had a lane to play it and wrap around the 10.
Play a hit, but play a big old hook. I'm glad you brought up 13, though, because 12 is the shot. You know, like last year, 15 is the shot everyone's going to remember.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to remember, and understandably so. The shot on 12, I cannot recall the last time I saw somebody hit it that close to that pin on 12 of the contenders.
Yeah.
Right? Usually it ends up being, and he said he pushed it a little bit, but that's why you start over the middle of the bunker in case you push it a little bit, and the wind was pushing it even further from left to right to get closer to that hole, and it took a nice little hop that way anyway. What he did on 13, his up and down on 13, that's what actually won him the tournament, because that's what gave him the cushion to do, be able to make bogey on 18. That was such an incredibly hard up and down. Hutton Lee put it in the water, among other things, on 13 on Sunday. But when he got to a similar spot as Rory, he put it in the water.
Yeah.
And we saw in that same group, you know, that's where Cam was. He couldn't get that up and down. And Cam hit an incredible chip from that spot. But from where they were, that is such a hard up and down. And he got it up and down, making that putt. And that was huge. And it's probably going to get overlooked, just like there are different moments from last year that get overlooked. Again, my favorite shot last year was probably what Rory did on 7, even though he didn't make the putt, but he was able to somehow get that thing up over the tree and get it onto the green. It's going to be one of those things that's overlooked, because yes, 12 is such a really bleeping good shot.
Yeah.
But 13 was a huge difference maker in being able to be where he was, hit an 8-iron into that green, and then still get up and down and make birdie.
I would also argue his putt on 16. You know, he took the tiger line and just had to tap in. You know, that's one of those moments. His adrenaline was pumping. He hits it over the green. And even though that's kind of a funnel pin on Sunday, you still got to put it in the right spot. And he put it to about an inch. I'll tell you what, man. With Scotty lurking the way that he did, in those moments, if Scotty makes that putt,
didn't really have his A game either.
If Scotty made that putt on 17, that was a half an inch outside the cup, maybe the best putt of his entire tournament.
Oh, such a good, a great camera angle too.
Yeah,
I still don't know how it didn't go in.
You wonder if that rattles Rory, because you know what I found fascinating about Rory is he said he was leaderboard watching, and he was very aware that the number one player in the world was creeping up. And if that putt goes in for Scotty, it might be a totally different tournament.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt it is. And it's just crazy how much better those two are. Because I would argue Scotty didn't have his A game this week either.
Yeah.
And he played spectacular and he ended up dismissing the question on Saturday after he shot 65. But it could have been better than 65. Crazy as that is to say.
Yeah, I mean, he almost came back from 12 shots just at the Masters. That's
incredible. I think what ended up happening to him, and I think it happened to Rose, and I think it happened to all the chasers, getting as close as they did through 27 holes, whether that was you made your big move on Saturday the way Scotty did, whether that was you made your big move, kind of a combination of late Saturday, early into those 9 holes on Sunday like Rose did, I think ultimately having to overcome those 6 strokes took a lot out of people, and they were just out of gas coming down the stretch.
And pressing, too. I mean, Rose to get to 13 and 2 and then 3-putt for a par. I mean, that just kills you when you're, you make the two putt with a birdie. All of a sudden, you're back in the co-lead. But that's why the saying is the Masters doesn't start until the second nine.
No, we've changed
Sunday.
It now. The Masters doesn't start until Rory makes a double on Sunday.
There you go. That's when, fair.
Wherever
fair.
Rory makes a double, that's when the Masters starts now. And we've still got plenty more to get into about Rory. I've got a question for Steven that's going to be our one call. That's all. We get to that next on a Masters recap edition of On the Tee. Gerber Law Offices has been serving the people of Wisconsin for more than 35 years. They are Wisconsin's premier injury firm, family firm, winning team. Wisconsin's own Gerber Law Offices, one call, that's all. Again, with Wisconsin, the one thing you always think about is Gerber Law Offices, their ties to Wisconsin. But for our one call right now this week on the tee, Steven, my one question is for you. One call, that's all. How many more major championships for Rory McIlroy? What's the number you think he ends at? Because we're starting to get now into heady territory. And he talked about it a little bit in his post-game or his post-round presser in his champions press conference about, six ties him with Faldo. Nick Faldo. And it ties him with Phil as well. But he was looking at it as of a prism of being the best European golfer of all time. So that ties him, at least in the modern era, for most major championships by a European player. He's won how many orders of merit? The most ever on the DP World Tour. He's on his way to accomplishing that goal, which is something he has openly talked about over his career. It took him, as he pointed out, 10 years, over 10 years, to win number 5, and number 6 followed relatively quickly after that. What do you think the final number ultimately is for Rory McIlroy?
Ten feels crazy to say out loud.
Ten seems like a big number, and that would get him to some.
Only three other players.
Yeah, three players have ever won double digit majors in the history of the game.
Just looking at the list right now, I think he's definitely getting to 8, which would be with Tom Watson.
I feel like 8's the most comfortable.
Yeah,
I feel you start. Going
I would have put
8.5
as the line in Vegas.
Yeah.
Or Potawatomi, but I would tell you, I feel pretty confident saying 9 out loud.
Okay.
And that would put him in tied for 4th with Ben Hogan and Gary Player. Rooting for 10 as a Rory fan, I would love to see him become the 4th all time to get to double digits behind Hagen, Woods, and Nicholas.
I mean, I feel like he's got another green jacket in him at this point.
Yeah,
because it seems like the course, and this is something Ernie Els has talked about, and he was somebody who is consistently snake bitten by this place. But either you're like one of those guys like Ernie, or once the course decides you're worthy, things seem to open up for you, and you just end up getting more opportunities. For example, the ball on 15 on Sunday for Rory.
Yeah,
when that landed, my heart stopped beating. Because I thought it was going to spin off the front and down. And that ball ends up in the pond, short of 15. That's all she wrote.
Yeah.
That's it.
You need a little lady luck.
And it bounced forward, stayed there. He two putts, he makes his par, and he moves on to 16.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a course that isn't a course fit right now for Rory and his game. When I think about what he's achieved in this game and his strengths, he's gotten the putting back up, and he's the best driver of the golf ball on planet Earth. I feel pretty confident with Rory at any major championship right now, and I don't see that changing anytime soon.
To me, what's changed over the last, I would say after, there was a time there where around the pandemic where we saw what Bryson was doing. He went, oh boy, I got to figure out a way to chase distance. And he did, and I don't know if he did it in the right way, because it seemed to affect his game. He's somehow faster now. I don't know how, but he's added even more distance to what he can do. The ball speeds that he is able to accomplish are outrageous, but he's been able to do that while also becoming a more complete golfer.
Yeah.
Like Rory pre-2021 would nuke a lot of wedges. Just, he was 120 yards out. That's not even close. What's he doing? And he has seemed to figure out that part of the game. And that's why I think the shot on 12 ultimately becomes so impressive, because it was this little sawed-off three-quarter nine-iron
yep.
that he was able to just fillet and saute in there, showing that he's not, to use a baseball term, he's not a thrower, he's a pitcher. He can paint those edges. He's got any shot you want him to hit, he's got it.
Yeah, he's an artist.
He worked on that shot Saturday in prep.
Mm-hmm.
The exact club, exact three-quarter, said, I'm going to need this.
Yeah.
And, well, he hit it perfect.
and you know what I love about that? That he went to the range on Saturday by himself?
Yeah.
Like, he didn't have a big team around him?
Nope.
Like, he knows his game. He knows his feel. He knew what was wrong. He said he just had to get back to the right swing path. And he didn't play great golf on Sunday, but he hit the shots when it mattered. And, I mean, if you're any other golfer in the field right now, you got to be afraid of what Rory can do, what a free Rory McIlroy looks like. And yeah, I if we talk about Rory, we have to talk about Scotty because,
yeah.
you know, four of the last majors overall and four of the last five Masters have been won by Rory McIlroy or Scotty Scheffler.
Yep.
Like, we are in a golden age right now of the one and two golfers in the world. This is the first time since the 2002 U.S. Open that number one and two in the world finished one and two. Think about that.
That's crazy. And by the way, I think Rory's also what makes this run for majors in this chase between him and Scotty, because I guarantee Scotty's going, wait, last year I had two and this guy had none. Now we have the same amount? We got the same amount of green jackets?
Yeah.
I can't let him chase away from me either. I can't let him run away in the major count either, because we were tied, you know, I was getting closer. You know, it was 5-4 at the end of last year. Now he's at 6-4. I can't let him run away from
it. And you know, it could be fun. You know, next April when we're doing our Masters preview show, we could be talking about 6-6.
Yeah.
You know, like mm-hmm. Scotty just, he ran away with two majors at the end of the year.
Yep. But I think
it's 1-2 and nobody's really that close right now.
Oh, it's they've lifted and separated. And here's the fun part. Last year, I don't want to say Rory checked out after he won at Augusta, but
you can say he checked out. I think we can say the monkey got off his back
and he
celebrated
it.
For a season until the Ryder Cup,
and he enjoyed it. Yes, it seemed like the next big event for him, the next thing. It wasn't the PGA or the US Open or the Open. It was winning a Ryder Cup at Bethpage Black.
Yeah,
and which he then went out and did. It feels like he has refocused himself. And these majors, I think he's going to be locked in this year for these major championships.
Well, I think that, of course, the future of the PGA Tour is, you know, what the schedule might look like. It only plays into the, you know, exactly what Rory and Scotty want, which is playing fewer events, more elevated events. And we've already seen that kind of from the schedule of Rory over the last couple of years. Of him being able to focus on the ones that matter to him,
because he doesn't even care. Like,
and
once again, he's skipping Hilton Head this week.
Yeah, and I think that the only reason Scotty's there is because he's a past champion. I would think. So, I think that like the way that the PGA Tour schedule is headed, in addition to the majors, it only favors what Rory is trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'll put my hand in the air. I did not see this coming from Rory. I said on our show last week, I thought he would, you know, he too many pre-tournament obligations and his head would be in the clouds and he wouldn't be the best golfer. Little did I know that he was taking a PJ over to Augusta after dropping Poppy off at school and practicing at Augusta National, because that's all that mattered to him
yep.
in those 3 weeks from the Players, was playing Augusta. Like, how could we know that? You know, but that was a crazy little nugget we learned.
It's a great nugget.
Dropping Poppy off at school, flying to Augusta National, and being home for dinner. That level of focus on what matters for Rory is why you can't help but let your head get to double digits for him right now, because that's all that matters.
That is
just like it's the only thing that matters for Tiger. When you walk in, you look at his trophy case.
It doesn't matter how many more. I mean, because Rory kind of checked some of the big ones off last year. He won at Pebble. Right? Like, winning on the PGA Tour doesn't do anything for him anymore. There's no other big event on the tour that he can win. The only thing that matters left are majors. And the only venue he probably wants to win at more than anything else right now is the Old Course. And that's a couple years away.
Yeah.
At the Open Championship. You know that's going to be circled in the calendar for him. And you know he's going to do whatever it takes to be ready for that one at that point. We'll wrap up our Masters recap coming up next on the tee. With 18 unforgettable holes on 250 acres of natural private land, the Bog provides the ultimate golf experience. After your round, stop in the clubhouse for food and drinks. Call 262-284-7075 or visit golfthebog.com. Wrapping things up here on the tee, our Augusta edition. Steven and I were both down there. Again, check out a special podcast only that we have of a roundtable with myself, Steven, Nolan Murphy, and Brian D. All four of us here in the GKB Milwaukee office, fortunate enough to go. Check it out. That's going to be available tomorrow on the ESPN Wisconsin app and the ESPN Milwaukee YouTube page. So go check that out. That'll be available tomorrow. When you think back on the 90th playing of the Masters, Steven, what do you think is going to be the lasting image or images that you have in your mind?
Well, I have the image. The picture from Founders Circle with my mom and dad. And to look at that photo and allow my mind to be flooded with all these memories, what I saw, the shots I witnessed, the feeling on the golf course, the walk, the smiles, like, you know, being that present with my parents for 10 plus hours mm-hmm. in a day in one of the great cathedrals of sport is something that I will never forget. I won't forget the sounds. But the feeling of sitting on the grandstand on 15 at 6:30 at night as Scottie Scheffler's group was coming through and they were mm-hmm. the final group that we were going to watch come through.
Oh, it was so hard Thursday night. That golf course got so hard.
Yeah, and Scottie was in that group with Robert McIntyre mm-hmm. That I alluded to earlier, watching Bobby Mack make a 9. And we're sitting on the left side of the grandstand on 15. The sun's setting. We've got the long shadows. And I'm staring down at the 15th green, which is just unbelievably breathtaking. And to my left, I'm looking over to 16. And I'm in where we were sitting, you could lean over and watch the guy hit the tee shot on 16. Mm-hmm. And it kind of matched the moment of walking into the facility. And the first thing being number 13 that I saw, that was the first piece of Augusta National property that I saw, like kind of bookending my day is something I'll never forget. It's very similar to the emotions I felt walking off of 18 with you at the old course, where I was in tears.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to cry right now, but I
did text you that my only regret for you going the first time is that I wouldn't be there to shove a camera in your face to get the raw emotion right after.
Yeah, but it's bigger than golf. It's bigger than sport. It's who I was there with. But it's also a place that, like, there's no guarantees I'll go back.
Mm-hmm.
And that was always weighing in my mind the whole day. Like, my dad hadn't been back in 25 years. And it's not just a ticket you can get. I learned that. And hopefully we'll be there with credentials maybe one day. But it was, I think, just the appreciation of what that day meant to me, to my parents. We were celebrating my dad's 70th birthday. Like, you talk about a core memory. That's one A, B, and C for me, was getting to do it with them. And I don't think there will be a singular moment, but that picture that I'll have of us at Founders Circle will allow me to, you know, transport back to what that entire day meant to us.
It's a topic that we cover a lot, I feel, on the tee. And I think we've touched on it just about every one of our six seasons, about how a lot of the reasons why we love golf is more than golf.
Yeah.
And Augusta is one of those places that brings that out of you.
Mm-hmm.
That makes you think about more than the birdies and bogeys that are just about to commence in front of you if you happen to be there. Or if you're just watching at home. It's always one of those special tournaments, and I think that's why I love it as much as I do. I know that's why you love it as much as you do, and why everybody does, and why it's the most popular golf tournament out there.
Yeah, and it sounds hyperbolic to say, but I'm going to say it, and I truly mean it. I've watched my favorite team win a Super Bowl in person, and this was infinitely better.
I don't think that sounds hyperbolic, but again, I'm also a golf nut, which is why we do this show.
But it's so much more than golf.
It is.
And you know it.
Yep.
It's the way they make you feel.
Mm-hmm.
The moment you walk through the gates.
And they know that, and they are trying to preserve that the best that they can.
Yeah. And I will say, being present in that capacity, it gives me hope. It gives me hope in humanity. Like, how we can get to that place again, you know? And I love that that's what makes Augusta, Augusta, is that that's the only place maybe in the world where 40,000 people are that present at one single time. But I hope we can get back to viewing sports like that again and not through our phones. And I'm the biggest culprit of it too. Like I know that. But that allowed me to reflect on just how important it is to be where your feet are. And I think that's my takeaway from a day at Augusta National.
He's Stephen Watson. I'm Gabe Neitzel. We'll be back next week, probably still talking about the Masters, at least a little bit, if we're being honest, on the team.